Welcome to another Rick and Rob Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
And I'm Rick Drewer.
Today we're going to talk about the historic first day-night test match at Adelaide Oval coming up. The South Australian sport and night sport has got a strong history in South Australia, dating back to baseball in 1952-53 at Norwood Oval, when it was inaugurated here, and it was followed in other states later. And it was proved so popular with crowds of 5,000 to 10,000. And people who work through the daytime can go at night time. And obviously with cricket and the new innovations, it's going to be a boon coming into the future.
It certainly is. And I think that's indicated with just about all sports moving towards the night time, from horse racing to football, cricket, you name it. That's the tendency.
South Australia has had trouble in the past with lights. With Football Park, a Royal Commission was needed before the lights went on in 1984. And when you look at other countries, in baseball, in America, Wrigley Field of Chicago took to 1988 before it had lights. So there has been problems over the years. But for Test cricket to finally sort of crack that night sport is a wonderful opportunity.
It is, and in relation to the history, the first attempt at lights at Adelaide Oval was interesting as well, because the concept was to have retractable lights, because there were great objections from particularly the residents of North Adelaide, and in fact they were installed, but there were problems in once they got them up they couldn't get them down, which is rather sad because the concept I think is very good. There are a couple of places in the world where retractable lights are working and are successful, but the reasons why they didn't work in Adelaide I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, the technology in modern sports fields is amazing. They have retractable roofs and all sorts of aspects, so welcome to the real world.
That's very true, very true.
Now, with the game itself, they're using a new innovation with the pink ball, and there's been some controversy about that. What's your feeling about that, Rick?
Well, it's interesting because moving away from the traditional red ball was first the white ball, which was used with 50-50 one-day cricket and using a blackened sight screen, with relatively little controversy. And I'm not quite sure why they didn't stick with that formula for this day-night inaugural test, because depending on who you speak to, the pink ball has got some question marks surrounding it, particularly in relation to vision at night time.
Yes, and going by Mark Cosgrove's assertion from the recent Sheffield Shield, he was saying the main problem is to come in cold against a pink ball with the night lights, whereas if you're already batting and you can pick it up, it isn't such a big problem.
Well, that's Mark's opinion, and it may well prove to be true. There was a mini collapse. South Australia had a huge collapse walking in to open the batting at night time with the pink ball. There was a mini collapse in one of the other Shield games, and I guess watch this space. Only time will tell whether that becomes a huge issue, because if it does, then there's going to be a real problem about day-night matches.
Well, historically, over the last 30 to 40 years, with the amount of changes in sports, it's a matter of adapting to it, and I'm sure there's going to be teething problems early in the piece.
Oh, I think so, and it's a bit like Australians aren't traditionally used to a ball swing as much as it does, say, when you're playing in England, and the pink ball and the white ball do traditionally swing more than the red ball. Well, you've just got to adapt to that, just like you adapt to the wind or whatever playing football. It's a matter of you know, getting used to what the conditions are going to be.
Now, going back to baseball again, which is obviously my background, they have a lot of night baseball and they have a lot of day baseball, and the same ball is used for both night and day.
Well, my big question is why, given that the white ball was proved to be quite successful, I don't quite understand why we've had to experiment again with a different ball for this inaugural test match, day-night test match. It's not as though Shield cricket hasn't been played as day-night games. This simply is the first test match and stick with what we know.
I believe the yellow ball, especially in football, has become popular for night games as well.
Yes, I did hear an expert say the other day that despite the fact that the yellow ball is particularly successful for Aussie rules football, that in experimentation, a yellow cricket ball doesn't show up very well and, for reasons beyond me, is very difficult to see.
And, of course, with the colour blindness, there's the tests tend to have the reds, the pinks and the greens backgrounds, and to identify someone that's colourblind, sometimes they can't see it, and I think that may cause a problem with some people.
Well, I'm sure it must do. It must do. And I think we've just got to be patient and see what the outcome is. Hopefully it's not going to favour one side or another considerably, but until we try it, we'll never know.
Yes, it's very interesting. And the players themselves, there's been mixed reaction from some of them, so I suppose it's a matter of getting on with the job.
Well, I think it is. Probably when, as poor old South Australia collapsed in its game recently against New South Wales to be 4-3, you tend to think, well, it's the ball, and New South Wales, who batted on forever and made lots and lots of runs, they didn't have too many complaints.
Well, continue on with that Sheffield Shield game. Now, obviously, we were talking about the Matador Cup previously before going on air, and South Australia's collapse in that game. What did you think of that in regards to South Australia? You've been a big South Australian supporter. There was hope there, but how did you see that?
Well, I was extremely pleased because over the last 10 or so years, the Redbacks in South Australia have been great underachievers, I think is probably the fairest way to put it. And the fact that we made the knockout final to challenge New South Wales in the final by beating Victoria, we were possibly a little bit lucky to do that, but nevertheless we got there. I thought it was a great achievement. But it was probably... it was probably the reward that South Australia needed, but they certainly didn't need to receive the flogging that they got in the final. But then you could argue that the New South Wales side is basically, or could be, an Australian test team.
Nine
of the 11, I think, have played for Australia, whereas South Australia really are lacking in experience, particularly in big games, which of course over the last 10 years we've very rarely played in.
Do you think the result of that Matador Cup final played a part in the opening Sheffield Shield game? Were they met each other again?
Well, I think it probably did. I mean, despite the fact that a number of the players came out and said it was a great encouragement that they made the final of the Matador Cup, I think it's a bit like when Port Adelaide got flogged by Geelong in their second premiership attempt, that I think they suffered for years after. And sport is so much played between the ears at top level that to receive that thrashing in the Matador Cup final and then unfortunately have to play the very same team again a few days later in a Sheffield Shield game, I think it is, at least at a subconscious level, wouldn't have helped.
No, and when players start sort of looking for excuses about the pink ball and things like that, it all sort of makes you think that, that's toughened up a little bit.
Well, I think that's true. You know, it's very easy to find excuses when you've failed. And as I said earlier, it's strange that we couldn't see the pink ball, but New South Wales, who didn't fail, obviously found it quite easy to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's an amazing set of circumstances when you look at a team like South Australia, which hasn't really tasted Sheffield Shield success since 95?
Earlier than that, I think.
Yeah, and then in New South Wales, who have been led by Australian captains and people that regularly test players, it makes you wonder sort of what South Australia has to do to get back to the glory days of the 70s with the Chappells and people like that.
Well, it does. I think in all sports there are cycles and all teams have their ups and downs. I think sad reality is that the Redbacks have been down for a long time. If it's just 1 or 2 years, but it seems to almost be par for the course at the present time. And I've got a feeling that it's now a sort of cultural thing, that the expectations are just not there. And maybe a complete, it's not so much necessarily a clean out of the players, but I think it may well be that a new broom might be needed to completely change at the hierarchy to start again. A bit like, again, going back to the football concept, Port Adelaide getting rid of virtually everybody, and many people would say that bringing in a CEO from Norwood was very non-Port Adelaide, but in fact it's been the best thing for that club, and I've got a feeling that the Sacker could well and truly do with a bit of a use of the broom.
Yes, and it's not only just with the cricket. South Australia has been bridesmaids and below in many other sports, so for baseball at the top level, the last time they had any success was like 1980, where they won the Claxton Shield. They've been in a few finals. They hosted it last year, but they just don't seem to be able to get over the line. Do you think this might be an aspect of South Australian culture at the moment? Because you look at all our young kids seem to be heading towards Melbourne and Sydney for the jobs, and do you think there might be something in that we do have a little bit of an inferiority complex?
Well, I almost think that it's not a thought, it's a fact, because the evidence tends to suggest that that's what is happening. And what worries me most of all is that if you look at a state that we tend to be compared with, not only on a sporting field but economically as well, that Tasmania is overachieving. Well, not necessarily overachieving, but it's certainly achieving beyond
holding its own weight.
Yes, mm. Economically at the present time, they're booming. Sportingly, they're sort of, as it were, batting above their weight often. And
on the national stage.
Yeah, and I think it really is partly a cultural thing.
Okay, well, thank you very much, listeners. This is the second edition of the Rick and Rob Sports Show. Until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye.